Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
Well, from smartphones to sedans, Xiaomi's morphing into a two-engine growth story. But with Washington threatening fresh tariffs and Beijing tightening rare earth magnet exports, the road out of China looks, shall we say, a little bumpy. Perfect time to bring in a former fund manager and author of White Man's Numbers, Sunil Shah. Sunil, good to have you. And Xiaomi is one of those that you've certainly followed for some time now. So if I was going to ask anyone on the show to talk about this company, it's you. If you had to pitch Xiaomi to an investment committee today in a couple of lines, what's the core edge? Is it the brand, cost curve, software ecosystem, or simply the scale that the company seems to be building?
Hi, Michael. Thank you for having me on your show. I would punt it in the elevator as Xiaomi, the Apple you never heard of, but has every prospects of becoming one.
Very interesting. So what makes it Apple-like in its business model? Is it the ecosystem?
It is. It's a digitally native management, as in one that isn't encumbered by a bricks and mortar legacy, a management that was born and nurtured in the digital age. So they started off life as a smartphone manufacturer, and it's very well done. It's the number three world smartphone manufacturer at the moment, but one that's probably not very well known outside, which isn't known in the US, but is probably very well known outside the US, including Europe. So they've gradually innovated and had user interfaces and internet services and an incredible product that has carved a niche in a land of giants, namely Apple and Samsung. And they've now, with their most recent launch, their Xiaomi 17 series, are going to pit head-to-head against Apple's iPhone 17. So on a line-by-line basis, their hardware specs are better or equal than Apple, and it's being offered at a 20% discount in Europe. And the battleground will be for the Mobile World Conference in Europe in 2026 in Barcelona, where their phone will try and pry users away from the very captive and profitable Apple lucrative user base. I see this company as being incredibly innovative, knowing their customer very well, knowing the kind of digital landscape intimately through being in China, and being able to offer that kind of holistic experience to their users. And I say the Apple you never heard of because Apple had Project Titan, in which they spent $7 billion trying to develop an EV, and you know that whole venture kind of died without a whisper.
Yes.
Xiaomi.
No,
but, Xiaomi is launched.
No,
I
just wanted to, I was at Mobile World Congress earlier this year. And what struck me, and I think their devices really are top draw. I mean, their hardware is certainly legendary, but sadly, Xiaomi's headline phones don't typically make it to South Africa via official channels, but you can get your hands on them. But what really struck me at MWC was the EV and just how remarkably well designed it was. And, you know, most people who were going past the Xiaomi stand weren't going for the phones, they were going for the EV. So what are we seeing on the EV side? Because I think in the last quarter, revenue at 18 billion RMB in Q1 and segment margins rising to 26% by the second quarter as volumes ramp up. I mean, that's also a significant driver of this business.
It's an incredible success for a smartphone manufacturer to transfer its skills so successfully onto an EV. And the one unique thing about Xiaomi is, you know, the Chinese offering is often regarded as the clone of the kind of Western brand. But Xiaomi headhunted and appointed the head of design at Audi and took him on board. And as you'll see by the lines and the design of their SU7, which was a kind of sports-based coupe, it absolutely blew the house down. I think it has a 12-week waiting list now, you know, a year and a half into launch. It's only sold in China at the moment. And they've had a second launch of the YU7, which is a Model Y competitor. And I'm just amazed at, you know, their skill and prowess in hiring a top-of-the-line Audi head of design director to develop their cars for Western tastes. I mean, the CEO of Ford borrowed or rented the Xiaomi SU7 in Europe when he was there for a two-week holiday with his daughter.
Yeah.
He drives that car into work every day. He said he was so blown away by the design, functionality, looks of the SU7 that he drives it in every day to work wherever he works in the U.S., to show his American colleagues what they're up against.
Yeah.
I mean, that's akin to the CEO of Coca-Cola drinking a Pepsi every day at the Monday management meeting.
It's unheard of, isn't it? You drive your competitor's vehicle, obviously, to do a bit of digging and spying on what they're up to. But when you fall in love with it and use it as your daily drive, well, I think that does show you what you're up against.
I think it is enormously attractive. And I specifically asked to talk to you about it because I think it could be one stock whose prospects could transform one's economic line or financial outcomes. Because, you know, within SA, one is kind of bereft of these wonderful ideas. And I think it's one company because just of the skill and expertise of management that they will be able to navigate through a, you know, dynamic consumer changing marketplace to provide products and gimmicks that will suit the world stage. So the Xiaomi 17 has a rear digital display. That's something very new where it acts as a second screen where you can have notifications, you can have dual apps running. And I'm very much looking forward to their launch in Europe, in Barcelona, in the Mobile World Congress in 2026, which will lead to some traction in sales. So in terms of its valuation, its EV business is still very much in its nascent stage. They hope to launch in Europe in 2027. And, you know, just given the price competitiveness and the appeal in America, in China, I see great hope or scope for this company to make a dent on the world in a premium stage as it launches its EVs in Europe.
Mm-hmm. So let's look at it from an investor perspective then, because the tape suggests that the street is paying up for execution. It's on a PE of 31, which actually, when you look at other Mag7 companies, and you know, it kind of puts it in that ballpark. So how do you value it? How do you do a sum of the parts? Because you've got the smartphones business. That's probably a bit of a cash cow. They've also got internet services, very high margin, probably more annuity. Yeah. And then you've got that EV kind of AI as the scale hungry option. So where can we be most wrong and maybe most right or multiples? I mean, how are you looking at it?
Yeah. Okay. So if it were a US-based company, I'm convinced it would be on twice the valuation as it is at the moment. You're right. It's on about a 30 or 25 PE, forward PE, on its current earnings base. That compares to a 33 PE for Apple, whereas Apple has 5 to 6% revenue growth going forward. Xiaomi will have closer to 20, 25% revenue rate going forward. And the EV business is still very much at an operating profit loss number. So as the EV business begins to acquire its scale to land into profitable territory, and they believe it will be sometime in the second quarter of 2026, we should see earnings improve markedly. In terms of valuation, it's one of those companies that I would rather say, do I trust management? The PE is not exorbitant, and given the skill and opportunity set ahead for the company, I believe earnings will grow in line with the consumer offerings that they provide. So as long as you're not overpaying for the company, this is a consumer growth stock that one just has to keep an eye on. And ultimately, do you trust management? I think it's one of the most impressive managements I've met in being able to transfer its smartphone skills into an EV. It has the highest number of software engineers employed by any single company in China. I think they have the expertise to navigate through a very difficult consumer and high flux consumer environment to continually provide offerings that will be appealing to a consumer market. So as long as you're not overpaying for the stock, I believe it could be one that is, you know, Apple or Tesla 10 years ago.
Remarkable. You heard it here. Sunil, when we look at the geopolitics at the moment, obviously there's so many moving parts here. You've got the US already blocking Chinese EVs with 100% tariffs. Now there's talk of another blanket 100% from the 1st of November. Do you think this shuts Xiaomi out of the US for the cycle? And then they simply reroute the strategy to Europe and Latin America and the Middle East. How do tariffs impact Xiaomi?
Yeah, so Xiaomi's been very careful not to stamp on toes of the US market, right? Given the disastrous outcome of Huawei, you know, another smartphone manufacturer, which was, you know, crushed at the knees as they became one of the world's largest smartphone vendors, Xiaomi has consciously stayed away from the US market. So its approach in attacking Europe first, I think, is a very wise one. In terms of the overall tariff structure, I think we're at a inflection point. We've had America exercise its bullying tactics all over the world, and Europe included, were very passive and accepted higher tariffs imposed. China was the only country that opposed the very adversarial approach taken by America. We're now at a point where China is exerting as much muscle and adversity to the US market as America is to China. For example, the rare earth metals export embargo is 2 kilograms of permanent magnets are required by every EV produced. There is no alternative but China, which has 60% of the raw materials and 90% of the processing capacity of these rare earth metals. So America is as beholden to China as China was to America regarding this semiconductor embargo.
Yeah,
she has actually reacted by banning Chinese companies from buying even the NVIDIA chips, the outmoded chips, GPUs that were permitted, saying, no, we have to be self-sufficient. So we kind of hit a crossroads where China is trying very hard to insulate itself against the bullying tactics of America and actually imposing its own screws and tightening its own whatever measures it can to inflict pain on the US economy. So I believe we are at a point where we have now two rivals which are as capable of causing harm to the other. And so we are going to see a far more level playing field in the market. So in terms of rare earths and also in terms of EVs, China supplies 80% of the world's batteries. Right. Yeah. The battery is the most significant part of an EV. 30 or 40% of the cost of an entire EV is the battery. So it's the critical component. The center of gravity has moved away from the engineering excellence of the combustion engine to the mastery of the automotive battery EV. And here again, we've seen the center of gravity shift to China, and China in a highly effective position to apply pressure to America.
Yeah, and that's via what is known as, if you look at the chemistry, NdFeB batteries, the neodymium iron boron, and the magnet, I should say, that is probably the single point of failure for EV motors. That is the most important. It's where China has built that arm lock. And I agree with your point. I think there's an essence of mad in all of this, isn't there? Mutually assured destruction in that, you know, where you've got two of the world's superpowers that can both claim to have a key choke point in global commerce, it does force both to reconsider how they play the game. When it comes to the EU game plan, let's just end on that maybe then. You know, management is guiding what? First exports to the EU in 2027. What would it have to do to de-risk that, given we've seen China's tightening export licenses for those rare earth magnets? Do they have to promise the Europeans some local assembly and maybe some French-shored magnet supply or partnerships? How do they do that to avoid any blowback?
I think that's a great point. There must be some reciprocity in being granted that outlet into the European EV market. But what's key in these rare earth metal processing, Michael, is that it's very dirty ecologically, right? The amount of acid and toxic waste produced by it, the EU is very reluctant. There's only one major plant outside the China which produces these rare earth metals. So even if the EU were granted access to the raw materials, I don't know how amenable the EU would be to having processing of the rare earth into the magnets being based in Europe. So I believe it's a problem that America and or the West is very happy for China to deal with as long as they don't apply the choke point within their grasp.
Sunil Shah, thank you very much. Great cutting through the hype to the core of probably one of the most interesting and compelling investment opportunities that we've covered on this show for quite some time.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.